Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Our musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1924 that which song became the very first country music record to sell 1 million copies? Was that A, You Are My Sunshine by Bob Atcher and Bonnie Blue Eyes? Was it B, The Prisoner's Song by Vernon Delhart? Was it C, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer by Gene Autry? Or was it D, Chattanooga Shoeshine Boy by Red Foley? First country music record to sell 1 million copies. What was that anyway? And question number two, it was on this day back in 1989 that the very first U.S. album was released legally in the Soviet Union. That album, New Jersey, by the recording artist Bon Jovi. How much did the Russian label, Melodia, pay the group for that album? Was it A, nothing, since Bon Jovi donated the album to the USSR? Was it B, just over $1 million in cash? Was it C, a truckload of firewood? Or was it D, 50 rubles and a case of vodka? 1989? First U.S. album released in the Soviet Union for how much? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com. And today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of August the 12th. Well, it was on this day, back in 1877, that Thomas Edison invented the phonograph and made the first sound recording, 1877 today. And it was just 90 years after that, 1967, that the Daughters of the American Revolution, DAR, refused to allow Joan Baez to perform at Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C., because of her opposition to the Vietnam War. Baez responded with a performance at a free concert at the base of the Washington Monument. 55 years ago, 1967, today. And finally, in transitions. Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta, You're the One That I Want, from the musical Grease. It's titled, Olivia Newton-John, pop singer and Grease star, dies at 73. This is written by Adam Bernstein, published in WashingtonPost.com on the 8th of August, 2022. Olivia Newton-John, the dulcet voice singer from Australia, who became a country pop, folk pop, rock pop, disco pop sensation in the 1970s, starred in the Hollywood musical juggernaut Grease, and underwent a sultry makeover with her mega-selling 1981 physical, died August 8th at her ranch in Southern California. She was 73. Her family announced the death in a statement on Facebook, noting that she has been a symbol of triumphs and hope for over 30 years, sharing her journey with breast cancer. Since her initial diagnosis at age 44, Ms. Newton-John had become an advocate for cancer research and awareness, as well as for environmental causes. She sang for presidents and a pope, the sick and the disabled, and touted music as a form of spiritual therapy, raising millions of dollars to fund the Olivia Newton-John Cancer Wellness and Research Center at Melbourne's Austin Hospital. Her latest albums featured inspirational music about love, friendship, and overcoming trauma. Music always helped me in my healing, and now it is my hope that it inspires healing in others, she told a reporter in 2007. She scored 5 number one hit singles over the next decade, I Honestly Love You, Have You Never Been Mellow, You're the One That I Want, Magic, and Physical. Won 4 Grammy Awards, hosted television specials that drew tens of millions of viewers, and remained Australia's all-time most successful solo music star. Then came Grease, 1978, which showcased both her charm and sex appeal. The film, based on the long-running Broadway musical comedy about a 1950s high school. Audiences responded in particular to her chemistry with Travolta in duets such as Summer Nights and You're the One That I Want. The soundtrack sold millions of copies and sent audiences back into the theater, creating a perfect commercial storm. And 2 years later, 1980, her singing was, quote-unquote, magic in the film Xanadu. Olivia Newton-John was born in Cambridge, England, on September 26, 1948. Her mother, the former Irene Born, was the daughter of the Nobel Prize-winning German-Jewish physicist Max Born, who had fled to England during Hitler's rise. Her father, Brindley Newton-John, was a German instructor at the University of Cambridge who relocated the family to Australia in the early 1950s when he became dean of a college in Melbourne. It was a musical home, with her father playing piano and her mother on cello. Olivia, the youngest of 3 siblings, sang. The article skips down, ends with this. It's funny, but now I'm known more for being a breast cancer survivor than for being a performer, Ms. Newton-John said, long into her initial recovery from the disease. It makes me proud to be someone who can inspire and help people. Maybe that was supposed to be my job all along.
Bartender, please don't be so slow. I got time for one more round and a 6-pack to go. Tomorrow morning, Sunday, I'm gonna be feeling low. So please, please, bartender, I want a 6-pack to go.
Hank Thompson singing A Six-Pack to Go introduces our country music news. It's a bio about Hank Thompson, written by John Rumble in CountryMusicHallOfFame.org. Few music artists from country genre can claim a longevity and track record to equal that of Hank Thompson. Between 1948 and 1974, he scored no less than 29 top 10 hits, with another 19 in the top 20, and continued to chart into the 1980s. Along the way, Thompson forged a potent blend of honky-tonk and western swing that has long served as a source of continuity amid country's experimentation with rock and pop sounds. While serving in the Navy, he took advantage of training programs and studied electrical engineering at Southern Methodist University, the University of Texas, and Princeton University, making him one of country music's better educated stars. During the 1950s, Thompson's songwriting talent, gravelly baritone, precise diction, and powerful combination of western swing and honky-tonk sounds helped him continue his string of hits.
Well, I don't have enough to pay my rent. I ain't gonna worry though.
Thompson was elected to the Country Music Hall of Fame in 1989 and to the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame in 1997. He succumbed to lung cancer on November 6, 2007, at his home in Keller, Texas. The Canadian Brass's Beale Street Blues introduces our music research and technology news. It's entitled, A Man Who Uses Music to Manage His Tourette Syndrome Will Have His Work Performed at the BBC Proms. This is written by Megan Gray, published in The Independent, 8th of August, 2022. Gavin Higgins, a composer in association with BBC National Orchestra of Wales, was diagnosed with Tourette's and obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, as a child. Growing up in London, surrounded by a family of brass musicians, he started using music as a form of self-therapy. Speaking to BBC News, he said, "Everything stops when I play music. Composing has become a really important creative outlet for me and certainly a way of calming down my OCD and my invasive and repetitive thoughts," he said. On Monday, the 8th of August, the Tregaregar Town Brass Band and the Welsh National Orchestra performed his Concerto Grosso at the Royal Albert Hall. Higgins said that Concerto Grosso celebrated music made by the working classes at the very heart of the British musical landscape. The Tregaregar Brass Band had been rehearsing Higgins' composition for months without knowing that they were working towards the proms. Higgins said that the audience would have their socks blown off by the performance from one of the best, world's best brass bands. "The performance will be the first time a brass band has played at the proms in 10 years. Higgins said that he hopes the events will get more people interested in brass bands and help them gain the recognition they deserve. When Higgins originally started developing facial tics and obsessive thoughts, he used music to calm symptoms down. This eventually turned into his career. I can lose myself in it for hours. It is not only something I love to do as a job, but something I need to do for me," Higgins said.
Chicken love, I let me play to my own. Get me out of my blues, and now I'm feeling brand new.
Everywhere. 여기가 이랬나 싶어 갑자기 낯선 네 풍경 괜히 추억에 잠겨 어렸던 책상도 떨어진 햇빛도 특별해 보이네 I'm living this lonely night.
BTS performing Fly to My Room introduces our rock and pop music news. It's an article entitled The Boys of BTS, The Global Phenoms Shift Their Focus. This is written by Risa Bruner, published in Time magazine on July the 4th, 2022. Seated at a feast in the style of Leonardo da Vinci's The Last Supper, the seven members of BTS celebrated their ninth anniversary as a band. The visual reference was apt. During a video of the mid-June dinner, the biggest musical act in the world dropped an industry-shaking bomb. They were starting a fresh chapter and prioritizing their solo careers. "We have to accept that we've changed," rapper and group leader RM said. "The problem with K-pop and the whole idol system is that they don't give you time to mature." Suga made clear that the group is not disbanding, and Jungkook cleared that this is not a hiatus. Over almost a decade together, the band has broken almost every charting and YouTube record and propelled K-pop into global consciousness. Recently, BTS picked up 6 Billboard number 1 hits in just over a year. On June the 10th, members released an anthology album, Proof, that ties a bow on their work so far. Still, their future musical output as a group is uncertain. Korea's required military service means that at least one member will be unavailable for the next 3 years. To fans, the new changes may be bittersweet, but it's also an opportunity to get to know the artist as individuals. BTS has long been dedicated to serving its global fan base. Next up, putting themselves first. The Avett Brothers, February 7, introduces our local music news. It's entitled, North Carolina's Avett Brothers will play in the new year in Charlotte. 3-time Grammy Award nominees and Concord natives, the Avett Brothers are set to play their first live show. Scott and Seth Avett talk about the bright side of the coronavirus and how they've been able to give the creative space to write new material. This is published in the News and Observer by Kaylee Cox, July 29, 2022. Tickets are now on sale for the Avett Brothers, the Concord-based folk rock band, who will perform in Charlotte on New Year's Eve. The show at Bojangles Coliseum will be the quartet's first in-person New Year's Eve show since Greensboro in 2019. Tickets range from $59 to $457 on Ticketmaster. The band is composed of brothers Seth and Scott Avett, along with Bob Crawford and Joe Kwan. The Avett Brothers have more than 2 million monthly listeners on Spotify. Their most popular song is I and Love and You. The New Year's Eve shows are an Avett Brother tradition that started nearly 20 years ago in Charlotte's Neighborhood Theater. The last time the band performed in Charlotte on New Year's Eve was 2018. The band also has played on New Year's Eve in Raleigh's PNC Arena in 2014 and 2017. In 2021, the band postponed its New Year's Eve in Charlotte show due to concerns over COVID-19. The 2020 show was virtual because of the pandemic. Scott Avett tested positive for COVID earlier this month, according to the group's Facebook page, forcing the band to reschedule some shows. Valiant Thor, a southern rock and heavy metal band from Greenville, North Carolina, is set to open the Avett Brothers December 31 show. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day, back in 1924, that which song became the very first country music record to sell 1 million copies? Was it A, You Are My Sunshine by Bob Batchelor and Bonnie Blue Eyes? Or was it B, Vernon Dalhart's The Prisoner's Song? Or was it C, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer by Gene Autry? Or was it D, Chattanooga Shoeshine Boy by Red Foley? Correct answer. Answer B. It was on this day, back in 1924, that The Prisoner's Song by Vernon Dalhart became the first country music record to sell 1 million copies. As noted in Lyrics.com, The Prisoner's Song is a song copyrighted by Vernon Dalhart in 1924 in the name of Dalhart's cousin, Guy Macy, who had sung it while staying at Dalhart's home and had in turn heard it from his brother, Robert Macy, who may have heard it while serving time in prison. The Prisoner's Song was one of the best-selling songs of the 1920s, particularly in the recording by Vernon Dalhart. The Vernon Dalhart version was recorded on Victor Records in October 1924 and marketed in the hillbilly music genre. It was likely one of the best-selling records of the early 20th century. Although contemporary data show that Victor pressed slightly over 1.3 million copies during the record's peak years of popularity, anecdotal accounts sourced from a 1940s promotional flyer report sales as high as 7 million. The song's publisher at the time, Shapiro Bernstein and Company, reportedly sold over 1 million copies of the song's sheet music. It was later performed by, among others, Hank Snow, Bill Monroe, and Brenda Lee. The first verse was sung by Liberace at the end of an episode of the 1960 television show Batman, in which Liberace played the double role of twin criminal brothers, both of whom ended the episode behind bars. The lyrics end with these lines, "Now, if I had the wings of an angel over these prison walls, I would fly, and I'd fly to the arms of my poor darling, and there I'd be willing to die." And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1989 that the first U.S. album was released legally in the Soviet Union. That album, New Jersey, by the recording artist Bon Jovi. How much did the Russian label Melodia pay the group for that album? Was it A, nothing, since Bon Jovi donated the album to the USSR? Was it B, just over $1 million in cash? Was it C, a truckload of firewood, or was it D, 50 rubles and a case of vodka? Correct answer, answer C. It was on this day back in 1989 that Bon Jovi's New Jersey album became the first U.S. album to be released legally in the Soviet Union. The Russian label Melodia paid the group with a truckload of firewood since rubles can't leave Russia. As noted in a 9/19/21 article by Sheehan Llewellyn in Loudersound.com titled Bon Jovi, How the New Jersey Album Nearly Killed the Band, their 1986 record, Slippery When Wet, was the multi-million-selling album that catapulted the band into the kind of fame that kids and bands can only dream about. Bon Jovi were, by their own admission, a glorified bar band who wanted to entertain, but in an honest blue-collar way that had much in common with fellow New Jersey boy Bruce Springsteen. They were a long-haired rock and roll band that didn't scare your parents, craftily bridging the gap between teenage pop and harder rock. Once they returned home from the grueling, slippery trek, they took barely enough time off to come up for air before heading straight back to work. As John told Classic Rock, "I should have gone fishing. I should have gone home for a year. But I couldn't wait to get another record out. I couldn't wait to show people that we hadn't been just lucky with that last album, that we could do it again. So we went on a world tour from October 1988 to February 1990, playing a total of 237 shows that ended in Mexico. And that almost killed us. August of 89 found Bon Jovi in Moscow headlining the inaugural, and as far as we know, only, Moscow Music Peace Festival. Their manager had booked two massive shows at the Olympic Stadium in Moscow. Alongside Jovi, the shows included sets from The Scorpions, Motley Crue, Ozzy Osbourne, and Russian rock band Gorky Park. At the time, John told UK music paper Sounds that he thought the Moscow Festival was a great idea, but he later admitted that festival in Moscow was a nightmare. Everyone's ego, every band, it led to serious cracks in the band. But allegedly, they did get a truckload of firewood. So let's close out today's program with the Beatles back in the USSR. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in the website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time. Back in the USSR.